Welcome to The Playbook. This is a podcast where we meet people and learn about how they build things. Today, I'm very excited to sitting down with someone who is normally on the other side asking people how they do it.
Yes.
I am with Lakshmi Prathuri, who most of you would know for Ink Talks. But for me, Lakshmi, I always remember the Mysore experience when TED came to India.
Right.
It's an event that I always remember. Wherever I go, I tell people about it.
Yeah.
That go back, you know, watch and learn how to do events.
Yeah.
Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you very much. Thank you. It is kind of strange to be on the other side, but I'll do my best.
Thank you. Let's start from the start. Give us a sense of where you come from, Lakshmi.
Yeah.
Give us a sense of growing up, things that you remember the most, things that you believe have shaped everything that you're doing today.
Yeah. I grew up in Hyderabad. I was born in Vizag, but we moved to Hyderabad when I was 3 months old. So my entire upbringing was in Hyderabad. And my family was the biggest influencer in my life. My father was a single father, the single parent, because my mom died, and he was my best friend growing up. He was a pediatrician, he was a musician, he was a writer. Musician meaning he never sang, but he wrote dance dramas, he wrote poetry, he was a romantic, he would call himself obsessive optimist, you know, like I've never heard him criticize anybody in my life. And he would bring all kinds of losers home. And I'm like, Dad, what is this person doing here? And he would find like the one positive thing about that person and say, I know he's like a pain, he talks a lot, but he sings really well, you know, or whatever. You know, he would find like the one positive thing about the person. And I would always fight with him like, you're not charging enough money. You're like this famous doctor. And look at all of them. They have bigger houses, this, that. And he had a box. And after the consultation was over, people put whatever they wanted in there. You know, he never said what his fee should be. So I used to get like very upset with him that you're not making enough money and all these things. And he would always say that, you know, you are my wealth. You know, my kids are my wealth. And we are all Lakshmis, actually. So he said, I gave it to you in your name, so don't ask me in kind, you know. So he had a great sense of humor, and he was a Padma Bhushan, he was a freedom fighter. So we grew up listening of stories of fighting for freedom. He wore khadi all his life, but chose not to go into politics and pursue pediatrics instead. So he said it was a choice after independence, because he fought with all, like Dr. Venkatraman, V.V. Giri, all of them, Neelam Sanjay Reddy, he knew all of them. So the choice for him was either he went into politics or pediatrics. And he said, I really felt I need to go into pediatrics. But all the Congress campaigns were out of our house. If anybody came, we went to meet them. I have like my photographs with all major leaders. Like I'll be like 3 or 4 in my night dress with the one, you know, ponytail on top of my head, looking ridiculous. But I'll be on the stage with all these people somewhere near their feet, you know. And so I was raised being exposed to everything. Like when my dad's book got released in Ravindra Bharati, I was on the stage with him. In the evenings when he was consulting, I was sitting in the consultation room doing my math homework while he was treating the patients. And, you know, when the dance drama rehearsal was going in the house, I would sit and watch it. And he would do yoga in the morning, so I would watch it. He went for walks, I went with him. But we would joke that his walks were never about getting workout. You know, they were about meeting people. He would walk for half an hour and stop somewhere, have chai in somebody's house, walk for another 10 minutes. We would go to our driver's house who worked in our house, go to his house, have another cup of chai, chat with his wife and kids, check on how his kids are doing. And while coming home, say hello to like 20 people and come home. So his 1 hour walk was, we would have met 20 people along the way and not quite the workout that people get these days in an hour, you know. So I think that really shaped that very middle class upbringing where we didn't have too much of anything, nor did we have a shortage of anything. We had a 2-bedroom house with 1 bathroom where 10 people lived, but we never felt anything was small. I mean, we had a big house. I mean, don't get me wrong. We had a big house in a nice neighborhood and all that stuff. But we never felt anything was off shortage. My grandparents lived with us. My grandmother raised me because my mom wasn't there. And my grandfather planted the most amazing trees in the backyard. You know, we had everything from mangoes to gooseberries to kadi patta to lemon to hibiscus to everything in our backyard, all planted by him. So it was a very happy childhood for me. And I was the youngest. My sisters are 18 and 12 years older than me. So I was spoiled rotten because I didn't have my own mother. I had like too many mothers. So I was, I had no shortage of anything in my life. So I grew up thinking I'm the center of the world. And then went to IIT Bombay for the first time in a hostel, found out I'm not the center of the world. I'm not the smartest person in the room. I'm not by any length the best in the college. In fact, I flunked for the first time after I went to IIT Bombay. So the upbringing all through my undergrad was amazing family, amazing education. You know, I went to Madapati Hanumantrao Girls High School, studied in Telugu medium till fifth grade. Satyavati teacher, my Telugu teacher, was my idol all through my college. She advised me. She's the one who pushed me into doing debating. I used to be afraid. I would go sneak under the table and hide if she made me talk in front of people. I used to be very nervous. But she was very keen that I became a public person, and she pushed me into essay writing competitions, debating, and I was always first in everything, and she was always there to support. So Thomas teacher, my English teacher, I mean, I had like amazing teachers who I remained friends with till they died. I visited them, all of them, you know. And then even in my college, Reddy College, Nizam College, I did a math, applied math statistics background. Bheem Sen Joshi sir, amazing people. Like sometimes there were 10 people in the class. We would all collectively decide to bunk the class because we wanted to watch a cricket game. But Bheem Sen Joshi sir would go into the class, sit there for that 1 hour by himself. He said, if you decide to bunk the class, it's your prerogative. But my job is to sit in that class. If anybody comes, I have to teach them. And he would sit for that 1 hour by himself in the class and go back to the staff room. These are the kinds of people I grew up with. You know, even in IIT Bombay, Fatak sir, you know, who was fantastic. You know, we were all like fans of Fatak. I flunked C.S. Zardzart one, but still I loved the man. I mean, he was such an idol. Chaturani sir in mathematics. I mean, they were like, even though I was not a good student, they really liked me and made me feel welcome. And I completely flung my way out of IIT and then went to Bajaj Institute, again, not knowing what an MBA was. I just wanted to get out of mathematics, get out of IIT. So I asked people, when people finish IIT, what do they do? And they said, oh, you know, they do, you know, something called an MBA. And I didn't even know what an MBA was. I said, where do people go? What are the best institutions you go to for MBA? But they said, there's some 3 IIMs and this Bajaj Institute. That was the only one in Bombay. So I said, if I say I'll go to another city, my dad won't agree. So in Bombay, whichever is the best, I will write an entrance exam to that. So I wrote an entrance exam. Then they said, you come for a group discussion. I didn't even know what a group discussion was. I went to it. I passed. Then I called my dad and said, I got into an MBA. I'm going to quit IIT. So my dad's like, what is an MBA? You know, our family is full of doctors and maybe an occasional engineer. And none of us knew what an MBA was. And making money was like a bad thing. Like nobody talked about it, you know. And so he called somebody and they said, no, MBA is a good thing. This is a good university. And he came to Bombay and then he said, look, I never would have let you do this. But then I don't want you to ever say my dad stood in my way of progress. So I'm going to let you do whatever you want. But you have to keep my trust and not, like, you know, misbehave or, you know, things like that, which of course I didn't listen, but that's another story. Then he said, you have to stay with the family I know as a paying guest and then go to no staying in hostel if it's not IIT, you know. So then I stayed in Nepean-Sea Road with family friends and would go to college every day and come back. And then, you know, from then I went off to US and all that stuff. But true to his word, he never stood in my way of progress, however unreasonable I was. I went off to US, I did all sorts of things. For 5 years, I didn't come home. In those days, there is no, you know, video chat. Trunk call was once a month for 3 minutes. But I would write like 10-page letters every week, you know, about everything I was doing. And he would write to me. But I just didn't want to have anything to do with India. I was just out of it. I was glad to be out of it. I felt this country didn't deserve me. I needed better. I was so tired of people telling me, you talk too much, you don't sit like this, you don't behave like a woman, you're too much, you're too smart. I just got tired of it. And I went to Portland, Oregon, and I felt I died and went to heaven because people loved the fact that I was questioning everything and I was the only Indian anywhere in sight. So they all thought I had beautiful complexion and I had the tan that they all wanted all their lives. And for the first time, people were calling me beautiful. I was like, I'm used to everybody saying, if you were only a little fair, you would have been really beautiful. Except my dad always, my whole family made me feel like I should be Miss India, you know. And so I think it's like everything in my life happened with no planning. I just grabbed the next best opportunity. I didn't know what the larger plan was. When I went to IIT, it wasn't like, that's what I wanted to do. I just wanted to go to Bombay, to see Bombay. And the only way my parents would send me was if I said I'll write an entrance exam. So that's all it was. And the same, I went to Bajaj because I wanted to get out of IIT. I went to US because I wanted to get out of India. And I went to Portland State because I just needed some job. So I repeated my MBA there. And I did a minor in theater arts because I always wanted to be in theater and I couldn't do it in India and I could do it in US. So there was never any plan for me, you know. Theater classes were available, I just went to theater classes. And there was an audition, I just auditioned and I got into plays. And then I just told my boss that I need to move to California because nobody here knows where India is on the map and I have to date people who know where India is on the map. So I got transferred to California and I went there, no plan whatsoever. And just stayed with Intel because I loved Andy Grove. He was like my corporate father, my idol, Gordon Moore. I mean, they were all to me like my idols. So to me, it was family. I just stayed there. And when Andy retired is the first time I thought I should do something else on my own. By then, my dad passed away. And he always asked me, what are you doing to bring the richest democracy and the largest democracy together? So I thought I should do something at the intersection of India and US, and I didn't know what that was. I tried various things. I was in nonprofit, I was in venture capital, everything, till I finally brought TED to India in 2009. I felt if I can put many Indian voices on TED, that'll be a great contribution because I could see TED was going to become big the minute online came. And then just in my coming and going to India, I thought, why not move to India? Again, no big plan. Just come here for a couple of years and then go back. You know, 10 years later, I'm still here. I have no idea what my next plan is. So I think life has been an amazing, amazing collection of fantastic accidents for me, and just trusting people. You know, I just trusted people blindly, you know, my gut feel. And sometimes I've been disappointed, but most of the times I've been very glad I took the chances I took. But if somebody is looking for a huge financial success story or to be a great business tycoon or something, I'll be the wrong person to follow. Like, I have no financial bone in my body, and nor do I care about being the CEO of a multi-billion dollar company. I feel like it's a pain to do that. I like small things. I like huge impact with a small group of people. You know, I really like in collaborations. I just feel
I would rather work with somebody who knows how to build a billion-dollar company than me building that. And by making them successful, I can take a piece of that. So I'm excited about having 1% of 100 things than 100% of one thing that makes me busy all the time. You know, I want my work and personal life to completely mingle and be shameless about it. So, you know, because that's what I saw my dad do. You know, there was no separation of work and home. And that's what guides me even today, is there's no separation of life and work for me.
Fascinating.
You'll have to edit it into a lot of smaller pieces because it's a huge monologue.
No. This is how conversations are. Yeah. So why should it be any different on a podcast? No, it's fascinating. It also helps us understand, what influences you or what drives you.
Yeah.
So it's very important,
right,
that monologue. If I were to look at one of the things that you do,
uh-huh.
I mean, you do a lot of things well. But, you know, a lot of people ask questions about how to build a community.
Correct.
How to keep it alive over years, decades, and so on.
Mm-hmm.
How to be the keeper of, you know, some of the best minds.
Mm-hmm.
How to keep conversations alive.
Mm-hmm.
You have watched TED closely.
Correct.
You've built now, you know, Inc. Talks itself.
Mm-hmm.
But this seems to be the center piece of everything that you're doing.
Correct.
So if you could share lessons in building a community, curating a community, holding them together, what would be some of those lessons? Give us everything, good, bad, and ugly.
I think the first thing about building a community is to do it with no purpose. Because most of the times we meet people for a purpose, saying, okay, I want to meet somebody because they might fund me, or I want to meet somebody, blah, blah, etc. But I think to have a curious mind and to meet people for no reason except to get to know them. And all my relationships are based on that. I have no purpose when I meet them. I mean, I just read about somebody, I find them fascinating, and I just say, hey, can we spend an afternoon together? Or like this whole holidays, for 5 days, I spent time with people who are over 80 years old. Just 2 hours talking to them about what their life has been, etc. So I think to have that insatiable curiosity with no ulterior motive is the first thing that's important in a community. Because the minute you have a transaction in mind, the other person smells it. You know, and to build a relationship, you shouldn't have any ulterior motive. Once you build a relationship, of course, take advantage of it. Be very upfront about it. To say, boss, I need to build this. I need to make $1 million. Help me how to do it. There's nothing wrong having transactions with your community. But to build a community, you should not have transaction in mind. That's a very important thing for me in all my relationships. My first few meetings with somebody has nothing to do with transactions. I just like them. I just hang out with them. And sometimes I know them for 10 years before I even ask them to do anything for me. And sometimes I don't even ask them, because I feel when you ask someone something, it has to benefit them as well. Otherwise, you shouldn't ask them. Or be upfront and say, look, this is a favor I'm asking you. Be upfront about it. So I think, as I said, the first most important thing about building a community is to just be curious about them. And honestly, because you cannot fake authenticity. You cannot fake it. And so to be authentic about yourself in your own weaknesses, in being vulnerable, in building that relationship, is the most important thing, to let the other person know you care about them and truly care about them. You can't fake it. So that's the first thing. And the second thing is really learn from others. You know, to me, to build a community, I have really seen the best. One is, as I said, I saw my dad. You know, the way he built our family as a community was amazing to me. And the lengths to which he went to spend the time, which didn't bring him any financial benefit, it was very good. And also, I watched both Richard Saul Wurman, who started TED, and Chris, who bought TED from him, grow it in very, very different ways, but very important ways. You know, Richard is a larger than life personality. And when a speaker was on stage, he was also sitting on the side of the stage. He would like, if somebody wore a tie, like when Nicholas Negroponte wore a tie on stage, he took a pair of scissors and walked up to him and cut the tie off in front of everybody. He built these amazing relationships where people didn't mind his idiosyncrasies. It was part of Richard being Richard. People loved him for who he is. And he had no business plan, no nothing like we have to make TED like be seen by millions or billions or anything. He just said, these are the 300 of my best friends I'll invite. And I'll invite people I like to be on stage and to be as authentic as possible. And we'll have a good time. That was it. And he, my God, created magic on stage. I mean, people wept at the talks. People, even to this day, I remember the first 5 minutes of being in the audience of the first ever TED I went and said, this is what I want to do in my life. I mean, it was magical to me. I mean, I've never seen anything like that in my life of 3 days of meeting people who designed robots based on cockroaches' legs and people who did amazing music, you know, Herbie Hancock chatting about, you know, what inspires him. And it was like magic, you know, Scott Cook, who's a founder of Intuit, just sitting in the audience, listening to others. And I mean, it was like magic to me. What Richard created was magic. And then I met Chris Anderson when he started coming to TED and when he bought TED. And the kind of vision he brought to TED to, you know, why only 300 people who sit in the audience should watch it. Everybody else should see it. And he brought a very different perspective, which is completely orthogonal to what Richard Solwerman had, but equally validating, you know. So I've learned from two of the best people of how you can develop an idea in two different ways. And I wanted to bring the authenticity and the magic that Richard brought, as well as the impact that Chris brought. And so I learned from the best about building a community and how they both built a community in two completely, completely different ways. And so, and the final thing about building a community is just watching yourself all the time, watching your failures, fail big. I mean, I've like fallen on my tush and on my face more times than you'd care to know. I mean, there are times I sit and say, how am I going to pay the next month's salary, you know? That fear, that scary thing, and how to ask for help. You know, you can't do it alone. You cannot do anything of importance in this world alone. You have to be willing to tell somebody, I don't know how to do this. Help me, you know.
How you do that?
Just ask. I just go to people and I say that, man, I don't know how to do this. Help me. I ask each of my team members, this is not your market salary. I'm paying you like pittance, but please stay with me. We'll figure it out. You know, you have to be open with your failures and not shove them under the carpet. And when you say that, people are willing to come and help you. Even today, I don't know. I don't have a 10-year plan. I don't have, let alone 10-year plan, I don't have a 3-year money in the bank. And people say this to me when I say, we're going to do this. They ask me, they're like, you have no idea how to do this, right? I'm like, yeah. I have no idea how I'm going to do it, but I want to do it. So just come on board and we'll figure it out. And half the time we make it and half the time we don't. But the experience of being together still matters. You know, so really focusing on the journey and not on the destination. We are so focused on the destination. Like, how much money will I make? How much will this have? But if you can truly disassociate yourself from that, but have somebody in your team who's constantly asking those questions, you know, as to how are we paying the salary next month? You know, where is that coming from? Somebody has to do that. But if I can disassociate myself from that and, you know, get people on board with my authenticity, you know, to say, I don't know how to do this, but let's do it together. And maybe I'm not the right person to do it. Let's find the right person to do it. You know, but in this area, I need to be there. I'll be really upset if anybody dethrones me in this area. So on stage, if we are interviewing somebody, I want to interview that person. And be very open about your idiosyncrasies also. You know, this will make me very upset. This particular thing is not negotiable with me. So you have to be open with your idiosyncrasies also, however idiotic they may be. So I think the more you're yourself, I mean, I think the more we can be that two-year-old or a three-year-old we were, people forgive you for falling. People forgive you for failing. People forgive you, period, you know, and they're with you. Yeah. It's when we have all these facades and we are trying to be like this perfect person who figured everything out and I'm the wheeler dealer who will make you a billionaire or something like that. People get disappointed and they get upset. And there are a lot of people I made upset in this journey. A lot. I made a lot of promises I didn't keep. And I still thank them for being my friends even today. I thought we will be where we are now 9 years ago. You know, it took us 10 years of a toiling and, you know, frustrations and all that stuff to get to a point where we haven't made it. I can just see light at the end of the tunnel now, barely. It may take another 10 years, you know. But I think, as I said, it's sort of summary. Meeting people with no purpose, truly caring about them, learning from the best, you know, catch their best qualities and learn from it and shape your own. What ink is, it's neither TED with that Richard did, nor is it the TED Chris did. It's something else that's relevant for India. But they both are very instrumental in shaping this. And so be influenced by the right people, but make that influence your own language. Don't just imitate blindly. Make it your own. And third, be the best observer of yourself. Be very, very honest about your failures as well as your successes. You know, when you're good at something, just say thank you. Instead of saying, no, it's not me who did it. It's somebody else. You know, we have like this false modesty a lot. So if someone says something, say thank you and be gracious about it. Don't make them feel bad about giving you a compliment. You know, be gracious about it. But it's not a but world, in an and world. And be graceful about your failures also. Accept them. Let people see. You know, I don't try to, my son is 16, I don't try to build a perfect parenthood for him. You know, he sees us fight, he sees us make up, he sees us work through our financial problems. He sees us, you know, pamper him. We tell him where the limits are. We tell him what we are willing to do and at what cost is it coming. And so I don't want to raise a child who thinks marriages are perfect or life is easy. I want him to see the warts and the downfalls and the ups and so he can decide who he wants to be with. With his white eyes open, you know. And so we talk about everything. And even with my team, I talk about everything. They'll tell you 50 faults I have because I'm a very, you know, imperfect boss. And actually, I'm not a boss at all. You know, I would love to be. Like, you know, I always say, what's that movie I keep forgetting? Meryl Streep is like this, this boss. And, you know, like she's a fashion magazine editor and she's dressed impeccably and she walks into office and everybody is like scared of her. And I always want to be like a boss like that who's impeccably dressed and like has the fashion at my fingertips and all that stuff. But I'm like this hugging, running teddy bear of a boss who never knows what I'm wearing. You know, I mean, it's like I have no fashion sense whatsoever except my own fashion sense. So I think that's what it takes to build a community. And I've been very blessed to be surrounded by people who teach me all the time.
Fascinating, Lakshmi. I mean, especially what you said about, you know, when someone compliments you.
Yeah.
I have seen a lot of times people do the right. other thing where
yeah.
you,
yeah.
the same way you accept failures, you right. accept success too. What's wrong in it?
Yeah.
Okay. The other thing, I want you to go back to building sure. community, especially with what you saw Chris or Richard do.
Mm-hmm.
Is it about selecting mm-hmm. people who would?
Yeah.
You know, what role does selection play
yeah.
in that experience? Because mm-hmm. what you said about TED is right. something people have talked about mm-hmm. a lot. Like, I was there and I was like, wow. I mean, you know, that experience, that magical mm-hmm. experience that you're talking about,
mm-hmm.
can you break it down for mm-hmm. me? Like, mm-hmm. Was it hand-picking, that right. judgment, mm-hmm. or the other things that go with an event?
Right.
And then the other thing, Lakshmi, after that I want to learn yeah. is, how do communities outlive the curators?
Correct. Correct. Yeah. yeah.
Maybe
yeah.
we should spend some time on
sure,
that as
sure.
well.
Sure. So I think, you know, you use the word curation, and I think it's a much abused word today, you know. But being a curator is a huge responsibility. Because what a curator does is looks at million pieces of information and decides what is the one information that needs to be presented to million people. You know, that has to be taken very, very seriously. You cannot be influenced by chalta hai attitude. You know, you have to be impeccable about everything. And also be prepared to make mistakes, you know, that's fine. But to have that editorial integrity of curation is very, very important. So I'll break it down into three different things. You know, we talked about curating the audience, curating the speakers, and then curating the experience, okay? So first, in curating the audience, I think, at least the thing I always think about, which I learned from watching. See, for each of them, for Richard, it was the people, the 300 of his best friends, people he loved. And it is very difficult to be loved by Richard. He's very picky. He doesn't suffer fools. You know, he will tell you on your face, I hate you. You disappointed me, or you are an idiot, whatever it is. He'll just tell you on your face. So to be in inner circle of Richard itself is a curatorial journey. You know, I mean, it's very, very tight group. So for him, it was a small group I personally choose, I care about. That's who will be there. And over the years, I've seen Chris and his amazing team. I mean, Chris always has a very, very good team. Choose people based a little bit more. It's not just based on who Chris feels are the best people, but it's a little bit more of an objective curation. They look at making sure there are people from different disciplines are there, because when you have 1,800 audience, you don't want 1,700 doctors or engineers. You don't want a single focus people. So you have a mix of everybody from venture capitalists to artists to architects to technologists to all kinds of stuff. So one is to have different disciplines. And second is to make sure you have different economic strata people also. So for example, TED today costs you know, a minimum $10,000, but an average of $15,000 to $20,000 to attend. You know, on top of it, you add your airfare and hotel and blah, blah, all that stuff. It's a big ticket item. And they make sure that they have certain number of seats for people. They give it $5,000 or $10,000 or free, or they make sure the curation of speakers is such that you're bringing some people who couldn't have afforded to be there otherwise, etc. So again, a curation to make sure those who can't afford it also can make it. And that is something definitely that has influenced me. So when we curate audience also, we are always looking at different groups of people, different disciplines, and if they can't afford it, how do we get them in? We don't ever say it's a free pass. We kind of say, can you come volunteer for this? Can you come volunteer for that? Can you help with this? And bring them that way, and make sure, same thing, our speakers are all people, unknown heroes also, not just known people. And we have a fellows program where we bring 20 people every year who are young and might not have otherwise spent the money to come to the conference. Or they could have. Some of them are very wealthy also. But they're talent who we believe will change the future of India in their own unique way. So that curation of the audience to make sure everybody feels that I met someone I would have not met otherwise in my day-to-day life. So I personally spend a lot of time on that to say who should be here, how do we get them here, how do we make sure they come here. And I think TED's success is because of that. And also to keep them engaged throughout the year. You know, that's the thing we are spending a lot of time on is how do we create events throughout the year that are engaging, programs that allow people to come throughout the year. So that's a very, very important thing. Curation of the audience, your community. And actually, that is more important than the speakers, you know, because a lot of times we say, whoever can pay the money, just pay and come, kind of a thing. But to curate that, to make sure the right people show up is very, very important. And to get the right people to show up, whatever it takes, you get the right people, you know. The second thing about speakers is, again, our tendency is to go for who's the most popular one today, right? And so the richest person, the most popular hero, the most successful sportsman, and mostly it's men, you know. It's just that that's where the world is. So we do really a lot of work on how do we tell stories that haven't been told before by people who are not the most articulate or the most polished or, you know, all those things. And also, we do make our mistakes in picking them. Sometimes we think they're going to make it and they don't, but it doesn't matter, you know. At that point, are they doing something that's very, very interesting? And do you believe that they can make a difference in the future by what they're doing? So to picking them up that way and not be enamored by just a name, but focus on the content of what they're going to say. Because 90% of the time you go to things and you're just outside most of the time meeting people. You're not listening to what people have to say. And so whatever you have to say, you know, you can spend only 20% of the time having speakers on the stage, but make that matter because the audience are gifting you the most important thing they own, which is their time. So you have to honor the time of the audience and give them something from the stage that matters to them. Mm. And that's very, very important. And despite all this work, we will have some talks that are not good. We will have some people who will disappoint the audience, but still at least do your best. So curating the speakers, working with them, and making sure they understand why this curation is important is another very, very important thing. And the third thing is the experience, you know. How is the overall experience for them from the time they arrive till the time they leave? How are they treated, you know? Is there a concierge desk helping them, or did they feel like they're completely lost, or are the mics really bad and, you know, the room really cold and all these things that's not making their experience good, you know? Are you making sure they're meeting people they wouldn't meet otherwise, you know? Are people walking around making sure if somebody's standing alone, is somebody going and talking to them? And just making sure the experience is nice, the food is nice, the drinks are nice, the conversations are nice, and there's comfortable seating, and all the thing that happens that you don't even notice is the most important thing. When someone, everything people don't notice is a positive thing for you, you know, that they came and walked away having a great time not knowing why is the best compliment you can get. And to do that, there is 50 people who have toiled for like 500 days to make sure that happens, you know. And there are some people who take it to the next level altogether. Like, for example, Nishit Desai has built this thing called Imaginarium in Alibag, And if you go there, this man has researched the seats that are in the auditorium that have like holes at precise places so air can get through. So if you're sitting on that seat for more than 6 hours, you're not sweating. And you know that, I mean, it is amazing to get this tour from Nishit Bhai of this location. Every little piece of the bench that's in the amphitheater, to the seat that you sit in, to the temperature in the room that can be adjusted to your liking because the system they have there is personalized to you. It's just amazing the level of detail they have gone to. And so that's the sort of stuff it takes to create a great experience where you don't even notice it. You just go sit for 6 hours and say, wow, that seat was very comfortable, but you didn't know that somebody worked for a year researching the right seat, flew to Italy or wherever it was, sat with the seat designer, modified that design and did it this way and got it shipped. The shipment was held for 2 months and it came. I mean, you don't know all this stuff, but that is what matters. And this is where I think we have not been trained in India, is that attention to detail. To say, how do I make the experience best? I mean, I give ourselves maybe 5 out of 10 rating today. And when people come to our events, they say, we have never seen anything like this. I mean, they give us 10 out of 10. And I feel we haven't even begun to make it 10 out of 10. To be that critical about an experience you're creating for the audience and the speakers and the fellows, everybody who's there, including the staff who's serving you, are they having a great time? You know, we tell, when we go to the hotel, we tell the general manager, all of them, come listen to some of the talks. I mean, just see what your hotel is home to, what you're creating here, what you're giving home to. Come listen to it. And, you know, to make sure the waiters who are there, are you greet them, you talk to them, notice them like a person. So everybody who comes in touch with you, are they having a great experience? Even there, I'm not successful all the time, but... You know, can we be like that? Can we create that? So I think curation of audience, speakers, experience. So when people ask me, why do you charge so much to come to your conference? Or why are these things expensive? I say, you get what you pay for. You know, I want talent, I have to pay them well. And I want great service. I have to make sure the waiter doesn't have to do 5 other jobs that he or she is doing this and only this, and they can give their 100% doing this. So how do we create that equitable world? Why are we okay to pay 1 lakh for a Louis Vuitton bag and negotiate from a 15 rupee handmade purse to 10 rupees from some poor woman who sat at home and sewn it? Why do we do it? Why are we not paying our own people well? You know, for the quality of work that they do. Why are we so enamored by brands and are willing to pay any amount of money to go to a country whose name you can't even pronounce, but you're not willing to create a clean surrounding around your own home? So these are the questions we have to ask ourselves and create that experience. When people come here, I want them to say, I had a great time in India. And I want to come back again and again and again. And that's what we spend our time doing. When they come to our conference, everybody leaves saying that we had a great time here. You know, we are taking friendships that we would have never had. And we always say it's one moment, one project, and one action out of every conference. It's one moment when you're happy you were here. You are just like, this moment made it worthwhile for me to be here. And one person you didn't know before you came here, whose friendship you're taking with you for the rest of your life, committing to that friendship the rest of your life. And one project, something you heard here that you'll get involved in that has nothing to do with your business that you will be associated with just by advising them maybe once a year. It doesn't matter. So it's one moment, one person, one project is very important out of every gathering we have. We tell people, this is the requirement out of you when you leave here. These are the things we want from you. So I think it's very, very important. All the devil is in the details. And the year we don't pay attention to that detail, I see it like just, it's not noticed by others, but we notice it. You know, it disappears. So it's not for others you do it. You have to have a very high standard for yourself. And you have to march to your own standards, because the global standards are very different than what chalta hai here. So if we want to be a global player, we have to be world class in what we do. Even if I'm doing it in a little village or in a villa, it doesn't matter. It has to be that world class. And it's a struggle in India to do it.
Yeah.
You know, it's like we do even things like all the cameramen, all the support staff, all the production crew, we gather them and I have a talk with them before the event starts, saying why everything they do is important here. The way they capture the image, the way they give the mic, the way they mic somebody, the way they do everything is important, because if one of them there is a glitch, the experience is not good. So, and it's just, people just don't understand why you have to be that precise. And I'm not even the most precise one. If you ask my husband, who's a process technologist, he'll say I'm like all over the map. And it's a journey the only thing standing between India being what it is today and India being a world leader is our attention to detail. That's it. We have the raw material, we have the talent, we have the resources, we have enough money in India to create world-class products out of here. We don't even need to look for anybody outside. But the generosity to give, to take chance, is very, very important. We don't like taking chances. And willing to pay for quality is very, very important. And if we can do that, you know, do this detailed work, which I myself am not great at. I'm learning all the time. I think, my God, there's no stopping India.
Final question, Lakshmi, is that about the community itself? Like,
yeah.
If you are a curator of a community, mm-hmm. You are excited all the time, but there would be moments when there is a fatigue.
Of course. Right?
Or maybe there are lots of moments of fatigue.
Sure.
So, how do you reinvigorate interest in a community as a curator?
Mm-hmm.
From what I hear from you and even others, mm-hmm. very existential questions get
correct,
asked yeah. all the time.
Correct.
So how yeah. do you kind of reimagine or rekindle
yeah.
that?
You know, we have a program called Ink Future Makers, where we bring people in who are, it's kind of like a, for lack of better words, a club. You know, people pay a membership, they're part of it, but it's by invitation only. And our promise is that we create great life experiences for you. Because when somebody is a very successful investor, there's not one more thing I can teach them about investing. When somebody has been very successful in one way or the other, they're a great musician or they're the richest person or whatever, there's nothing in their trade I can teach them. All I can do is make them be exposed to a conversation or an experience where at least once in the entire year, they felt I was rejuvenated by this experience. That's it. You know, so I have chosen a path of, I believe in a ripple effect. You know, I am not building a community of 1 billion people. I'm building a community of 300 people or 500 people. And how do we keep them, you know, invigorated and excited so they go out and do what they need to do? So it's important for me to focus on what experience am I creating for them that's not transactional. You know, so can I take them away from their busy life for 2 days or 3 days and give them an experience that they feel was worth it? That's all we focus on, like one little bit at a time. If we can do that, maybe they'll give me the gift of their time to create another experience for them. And maybe another. But my job is to keep coming up with these experiences and not be afraid to experiment. Like, for example, I was telling you on January 10th, we are doing an event called about consciousness. Now, when you rent the Royal Opera House where there's 575 seats and you say, I'm going to talk about consciousness with a neuroscientist and an amazing filmmaker and a scientist with no star power in terms of regular, like I don't have an actor, I don't have a musician, I don't have, you know, some other thing usually you have to get people there so they listen to what you really want them to listen. And we are Anand Gandhi, who's the, you know, who's working on this with me, we both said that let's take a chance and say that this is a pure intellectual conversation, you know, be there. And we have no idea how it'll share. I mean, we know exactly what we want to talk about. We have thought about every minute of what we do, but also allow for that surprise, for that thing. And we have someone like V.S. Ramachandran, who's one of the most amazing brains in this world. And the only purpose, the only star that evening is Ramachandran, you know. And we feel that beautiful brains should be as celebrated, you know. And so, you know, for us, it's like, of course, this is how we would do it. And so even when we were talking to some friends about, hey, can you help with outreach or whatever, they're like, why don't you ask at least some actor to come and intro the event? Or, and we also went down that path of, should we get somebody to do comedy? Should we get somebody to? And then we just stopped. And I have to give all the credit to Anand. And then we just stopped. And then we said, you know what? No. Let's just do it the way we would like to spend an evening together. And let's not underestimate the intelligence of people. Because a lot of times we put these other things because we underestimate the intelligence of the audience. We think they won't understand consciousness. So let's put three other things for which they'll come there and then we'll shove in consciousness on them, you know. But if we just said, no, you know what? They are intelligent enough to come. But and you know what? Even if 100 people show up, that's fine. Because the 100 people who matter are there instead of 1,000 people who don't matter, you know, in our journey. So to be able to take these kinds of risks and curate an experience that is very, very in-depth conversation, you know, I wouldn't even label it as intellectual or something, just an in-depth conversation and nothing more than that. Can we all learn something different in that evening that we didn't know before we came? So, you know, these are the sort of things that we keep doing to... you keep giving different experiences throughout the year. And for everybody, something different appeals. Yeah. So you have a wine tasting, you have a conversation on consciousness, and you take people to check on dinosaur fossils, and you also take them to see what inside of Facebook looks like. So, you know, when you give four different experiences, different things will appeal to different people. But if you focus on the experience, make sure the experience is great, I think, you know, it'll make a difference for the people that matter to us. So our focus is on for these people who are out there day in and day out toiling to build, you know, something huge out there. Can we give them a respite for 2-3 days where their brain cells get recharged? You know, so we call it our brain spa. You know, when you have your body aches, you go to the spa to get it massaged. And, you know, this is where you get your thoughts massaged, your ideas massaged, and yourself, you know, your own brain spa. So just come here and be very unapologetic about it and say, this is what it is. And this is what it costs to make it happen, you know. So let's do it well, you know. So.
Very well said, Lakshmi. Actually, this conversation in particular, I really like because with you have illustrated role of a curator very well.
Yeah.
And if I were to just capture all of it, you know, the building blocks of community, engagement, and magical experiences.
Yeah.
Thank you for sharing all of this.
Sure.
And Godspeed with the next Inc. talks or, you know, the big events.
Yeah.
And I hope everybody learns from this. Thank you.
Yes. And I hope I keep learning because the day we stop, keep learning, we might as well be like, you know, whatever, parallel to the ground and be out somewhere, you know.
Thank you, Lakshmi.
Thanks a lot.
So good talking
to you.
Thank you.
Thank you.